I mean, Carapaz, Bradley, I mean, this is, we said it yesterday. We essentially guaranteed that he was going to be a factor in this race today. We talked about it a week ago. You know, the week three of the tour always, you know, there's always stories. Yeah. And we've had stories.
He's very, very impressive, isn't he?
To me, I mean, the story of week three.
We said when he gets that win the other day that he's on a roll and he wouldn't rest there. But the last 3 days to finish twice first and third and secure the King of the Mountains. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next to Pogacar, the best rider in the race.
Yeah.
At the final week, best rider.
All right, everybody, we are back. This is the Move Podcast. Whew. I feel like I rode the tour. Stage 20. I am joined by Sir Bradley Wiggins, Mr. George Hincapie, who's still, boys are mad at me because we started early today. I got, my mom is in town.
Oh, nice.
My parents. And obviously my son's here. I got to get to the golf course right after this. So we had to kick it off. We will be joined by the professor, Spencer Martin. But before we do, special guest, Alana Zizi. You hear him every day. This is the man who kicks off your day, tells us every day. Because God forbid we try to pronounce some of these places. Although, Sir Bradley, you could do it. Alan, just to start us off here, what happened here on stage 20?
Oh boy. we thought,
jeez. Where did we get?
You don't want me to do
it. Well, I'll talk to you for a second afterwards, but just pretend like you're not here. I mean, you know what I mean? Stage 20, what do we do?
Okay. Stage 20 is from Le Bourdoisan to Alpe d'Huez. From Le Bourdoisan to Alpe d'Huez.
But even better in person, isn't it? It's just something. Alan, how many years have you been doing this for us? It's been a lot. 7-8 years, maybe?
I think it was the second year you did the podcast. Boy.
And George and I were talking on the ride yesterday. How many?
I think like 10.
Is this the 10th year of the Move or more? How do we not know the? I mean,
I know we should know that.
Anyways, Alan's been around a long time. You grew up in France. This is, by the way, sorry about the World Cup. How that all went down for you?
Oh boy,
I know. Yeah.
Let's not go there now.
Okay.
What? You started the first year was 14, like 2 hours, two years after. I don't know. After I retired, I think. But I didn't do the first year or two with you.
Mm.
I
was
wrong. What is it, Bosca?
17, first year.
With me or so I did my first year was 18 then.
Your first year was 18.
So the first year of the Move was 2017. So this is the 10th year.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
So I think I've been doing it for 10 years actually.
That's pretty amazing. Well, it's become a mainstay. I just thought, and I think you came on last year, maybe the year before too. Anyways,
yeah, you're
part of the family. You're part of the team. You grew up watching the tour?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
in Avignon, in the South of France, yeah. When they used to come and do the Ventoux.
Yeah. We miss it. Anyways, Alan, thank you for doing this.
Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, Alan.
We'll have you back. Should we have him back for the 11th year?
Yeah.
You know, George's wife does the Tour de France Femme of Ex-Zwift.
I know.
She's doing the recording today.
Okay, good.
Bolt's just going over.
Alan, you're the man.
You guys have a great day.
We'll see you at the Paella party tomorrow night.
All right.
Now we get the professor back. The professor actually has some fun data for us today. He's living up to his title.
He's got matching shorts and t-shirt on. Now he's getting all like...
Don't forget your ear things. Stage 20, another run up Alpe d'Huez. Kind of an exciting... A lot happened. Queen stage, 18,000 feet of climbing. Bodies everywhere. In fact, we're still just looking at the stage finishers from today. This just gives you an indication of just how hard this tour has been, just how hard today's stage was. Not sure it was totally necessary in hindsight. The 70th, to start, the time cut for today is 51 minutes. The 70th place finisher today has just come in almost 38 minutes. I'm not so sure that everybody's going to make the time cut. TBD on whether or not they let them in the race tomorrow.
George, thoughts?
One, well, I've heard rumblings that this is the hardest Tour de France stage ever.
Yeah, I think that in terms of vert
VVOM,
almost 18,000. What's the VOM?
The
VVOM is high.
What is it?
119. And yesterday was 92.
Yeah, because we haven't gone over 100 until today.
It's very rare to go over 100.
But man, waking up at 4:30 a.m., I set my alarm. I wanted to, 4:20 because I wanted to watch this climb. It was unbelievable how hard they were racing at the start of this mountain. And unbelievable how much work Richard Carapaz did the whole day.
Yeah.
I mean, he attacked with 4K to go to the top of Croix de Fer. Croix de Fer is no joke, no panic. No, it's very hard. One of the hardest climbs in the whole Tour de France. And he just attacks all in for the mountain jersey. And then he even said in his interview, that was my goal, was to get that point sprint top of that mountain. And he's like, I feel pretty good. I might as well go for the stage win now. Sadly, though, we did lose Sepp Kuss to two crashes who arguably could have won the stage as well.
Yeah, I mean, Sir Bradley, we kind of saw it all.
Yeah.
Right? You had a great, Sepp, I just thought it was in the bag. He was riding great. Not only did he crash once, he crashed twice on that downhill.
I do think stages like this are far more exciting to watch than some of the other stages we've had in the mountains where it's been relatively flat with a final finish climb.
Yeah,
I think these classic stages, these classic climbs, the Galibier, you always end up with the worthy winners. And there was so much happening today. Couldn't take your eyes off the race compared to some of the other days. But big shout out to Mads Pedersen as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he got dropped on the category one at the start. Came back, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then attacked the peloton, got across to the break and won the intermediate. Yeah. I mean, those two guys, the last 3 days Pedersen's had and the last 3 days that Carapaz has had, they've really been brilliant to watch.
Yeah, Mats Pedersen is, I mean, yesterday I sort of referred to him as a heavyweight champ he's just a junkyard dog.
Yeah.
He's like a UFC fighter. That's so tough. It's so
like we said, hardest stage of the tour maybe ever, but like I know people probably out there watching Sepp going, "What's going on? He crashed twice." But like imagine being solo in the Tour de France stage.
Yeah.
You're not going downhill. You're still at altitude. Your heart rate's not recovering even though you're going downhill. I mean, he was all in and you almost get delirious in moments like that, and you saw it happen.
I think he had to have, look, this is a kid who grew up in Colorado. He's climbed big mountains. He's descended big mountains. He knows how to descend. I think the weight of the tour and the toll of the tour just caught up to him. You know, he might have been a little cross-eyed. By the way, if you go back and watch the first crash, that corner, if you watch it quickly, you may not notice what they had a lot of padding up, but then after the padding, they had just a 100 yards of netting.
Yeah, netting.
And he
came really hit close coming off that cliff.
The very end of the netting. Yeah. I mean, the netting is there for a reason. God forbid you look over the edge. I mean, it's, we've talked about this in the last week, especially in lieu of some of the shenanigans that have taken place. This is a very dangerous sport. I mean, that net was, and then he unfortunately crashed again. I think he was just.
The net was on the second crash, but like you're saying, I mean, devastating result for Sepp being in the hunt for the win. Arguably probably could have made it because he was riding really well.
Yeah.
But the other outcome could have been absolutely horrible. So he's got to be thankful. I mean, we're all thankful that he didn't get hurt there.
Yeah. I mean, Carapaz, Bradley, I mean, we said it yesterday. We essentially guaranteed that he was going to be a factor in this race today. We talked about it a week ago. You know, the week three of the tour always, you know, there's always stories.
Yeah.
And we've had stories.
He's very, very impressive, isn't he?
To me, he's the story of week three.
We said when he gets that win the other day that he's on a roll and he wouldn't rest there. But the last 3 days to finish twice first and third and secure the King of the Mountains, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, next to Pogacar, the best rider in the race.
Yeah.
At the final week, best rider.
Yeah. I mean, probably by time.
Yeah.
If you just tally it up, he's the best rider.
And top 10, would you see it anyway?
Yeah, his last three results, first, third, first, almost gets the stage win yesterday. Yeah. I don't know if people understand how hard that is. Can you imagine yesterday getting that close to Alpe d'Huez stage win? You don't get it, and then you're staring down the barrel at this stage, and you think, man, I'll just
go. I don't remember seeing a rider, a climber, that can do these full gas sprint attacks on every climb and still be able to have the endurance to make it to the finish line. Like, he's just on the another level right now in terms of what he's doing.
Eighth overall, which is very good. The impressive thing about him is he probably, let's say he put his whole heart into the GC and rode really conservatively. what's he finish? You think fifth?
No, yeah. I don't know.
He's not that kind of rider, is he?
Yeah, but it would be way less exciting too. Yeah. So
he's better off doing what he's done, getting 10th versus conserving, not getting stage wins and getting seventh. Mm. I don't know that he's a top five guy with this field, but.
And it's great for EF. Like he's always out there. Mm-hmm. Like that's such a better situation for them than him getting sixth and not winning a stage.
Mm. Of course, this is the second time in 2 days that we finished on Alpe d'Huez. Kind of an interesting, it's funny, if you just do the traditional Alpe d'Huez, you never even know that there's other roads that come up and tie in to the main climb. But I found out today.
Yeah.
I did get a fun picture from Jimmy Riccitiello, of course, the father of Matthew Riccitiello. If you went on Alpe d'Huez, they put your name in. There's 21 switchbacks, so they put your name on the switchbacks. And of course, they've done it enough times; they're now having to double up. And look at there!
Wow!
Look at the old man, turned 21.
Did Jimmy take that photo?
Jimmy took it. Yeah, he's over there right now.
And his son was in the breakaway.
Son was in the break. Yeah, Jimmy takes a group of people over there every year. Like a touring group, and they hang out for a few days and train and watch the race. And
yeah, I think Matthew used to do those camps with him on Alpe d'Huez, so he knows that climb from being a kid.
And unfortunately, you know, we have this perfect setup here at the studio, and we all sit here and we have the Huckberry Chill Chamber where we watch the race. We've actually been watching the race on Flow Sports this year, but before we come over here, I'm at the house, and you know, the only thing at the house is Peacock, so I'm watching, having to listen to Bob Roll, and he's. He's sort of bigging up Sepp Kuss and Matthew Riccitiello, which I think is amazing. And he says, you know, these two guys, they have the opportunity to be the first American to win on Alpe d'Huez since Andy Hampston. And then Jimmy sent me that picture. I was like, wait a minute. What's going on here? I don't know either.
Shout out. We love Flo. Shout out Flo.
Here's a question for you. If Tadej hadn't ridden for Del Toro today,
yeah,
what were his chances of catching Carapaz and winning the stage?
I think 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
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 And so on that, what do we think about the way Tadej played the stage today?
Mm. I don't like it at all. Mm. At all.
Well, he only had Del Toro left, so it was either Tadej or Del Toro in order to close down that 4-minute gap on the valley, even though they got pretty close.
Pogacar could have sprinted
done
it away.
Yeah, he could have done it by himself. But you guys seemed to, as it was going down, it wasn't popular in the Huckberry Chill Chamber. Everybody's
like, oh, no. I think from my point of view, like I think you get used to being entertained by a Tadej, you know, and it is exhilarating watching him do what he does. So I think the more he gives you, the more you want of it.
Yeah.
And so today was a little bit like, oh, he's not going for it.
Yeah, but
what a shame.
I would have done the same thing. I thought it was cool what he did. Having said that, he didn't need to do it.
No, he didn't.
Seixas was dropped. Mm. Del Toro was going to be fine. He was going to secure third place. By the way, there was a lot going on in this bike race.
Yeah, a lot,
when you think about
a lot of dynamics.
All of the things at stake, being, you know, the third step on the podium being one of them, Del Toro had it. So I can almost see what you're saying, but I thought it was a good look. I thought, you know, for him, that's a safe thing to do. And it certainly builds... you know, a lot of camaraderie and a lot of loyalty within the team.
Yes.
If he didn't already have it. I thought it was...
Probably the regular fan eats that up too, right? They're not like us. They're not mean people like me and Bradley who want to see him drop his teammate and go crush Carapaz to win.
That's good. George and I, now we're the nice guys.
But on the Galibia, he
Unless
went,
it comes to Bob Roll. Let's talk about the move of the day. I forgot to do the move of the day. Of course, the move of the day is brought to you by 8Sleep. It is a smart mattress cover. They are the official sleep partner of Team UAE Emirates. You can heat or cool each side from 55 to 110. 8sleep.com/the move. So Bradley, move of the day.
Do you know what? I'm going to go a bit left field here.
Good.
I'm going to give it to Sepp Kuss because I think... the way he rode up till the first crash, I mean, he had the stage in the bag. And after the tour they've had, we said the other day, you know, it'd be interesting what Visma do now that they have a, you know, free reign to do what they want to do and get in the break. And Sepp was on for that. And I was a bit mean to him when he first crashed. I was like, you wally. You know, you had it in the bag. And then the second crash happened and I was like, oh, you absolute tool. you know, and that was my, you know, but then I felt really sorry for him coming across the line, and I watched his interview and I was like, God, I was a bit mean about him. And the way he took it, and it, you know, it was just, it was really sad. So move of the day for me. You get a free mattress in the post for that.
Yeah. Bradley, I'm going to have to agree with you. Yeah. Not only that, but just his whole team took the responsibility from the first climb. They set tempo the whole way up the first climb. With in mind that Sepp was the leader of the day, and he really answered that call of team leadership and was going to win the stage. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, like I said, you're delirious, heart rate probably 200 at 7,000 or 8,000 feet of altitude. You're not recovering on these downhills, and you're going all in. You got Carapaz hunting you down at 12 seconds. I mean, you're going to take risks. That is cycling 101.
And so, who knows if it's
unfortunately, it didn't work out.
A fueling factor.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it kind of looked like
that climb was so steep. There's no way you're doing gels on that climb. Like, you're going all in. So this is hard.
I mean, cross-eyed is cross-eyed.
Yep.
These things are hard to do when you're cross-eyed.
I mean, he's such a good rider. He wins that stage of the Giro, and they need it. Like, hey, Sepp, so Jonas is out. You want to try to win a stage? Yep. You can't sprint. You can't time trial. Yeah, like, that's not so easy.
He was right there yesterday, too.
Yeah.
And having a great last week of the tour.
Bradley and I were shopping around for new jobs for him.
Oh, he needs to get out of that team. I think he needs a new lease of life.
I do agree.
He needs to go to either Decathlon or Ineos and just
start over.
Yeah, he's got so much potential, and I just feel like he's wasting now.
Team.
That, his job is done in that team.
Yes.
That team is sort of on the downhill now.
My move of the day is Mads Pedersen. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. Col de la Coiffure, just a sprinter. Like, I'm dropped.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm just going to go back to the peloton. You know what? I'm just going to bridge up to the breakaway. And he just sprinted across the break. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he closed like a minute gap or 45 seconds. I mean, it's unreal what he did.
My move of the day, Richard Carapaz. For the sheer fact that this man and this man alone actually made me appreciate the polka dot jersey in 2026.
Wow.
I can't stand the jersey.
We have not heard that.
The jersey.
In 10 years.
Before today, I sort of was thinking about this, and I thought, you know what? This is stupid. Don't get points for this thing. This should just be a committee that votes. I mean, because we can all see who is the best climber in the race. Nonetheless, there are points. He has convinced me that he is a worthy champion of the polka dot jersey in 2026. I also think that he will, or at least he should be named the most aggressive rider in 2026. There could be some others that could make an argument there. But if you're thinking about this, he animated the race, and I love the way he rides. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, just watching him from that first climb today, thinking he's going all in for the mountain jersey, and still there at the finish, never giving up. 10, 12 seconds behind, and you know, keeping that composure to catch it back up to Sepp after the crash and win the stage.
Total badass.
Yeah, total badass.
Also today, brought to you by our friends at Ecoy. Your shoes are one of the most important contact points on your bike, but usually ultra stiff race shoes make you pay for power transfer with pure discomfort. Not the Ecoy C12 Full Carbon Pro, built with direct input from the Pro Peloton. It pairs a rigid full carbon sole with a wraparound construction that gives you maximum support and all-day comfort on the longest, toughest rides. Get maximum power with zero punishment. If you want the same advantage for your own riding and racing, scan the flow code on the screen. Check out the link in the show notes or simply head to ecoy.com. We're talking about Huckberry. Talking about the Huckberry Chill Chamber. We're chilling in the Huckberry Chill Chamber every year. It's a nice little setup, you know, just...
We love it. It's great.
George was surprised I arrived at the Chill Chamber so early this morning. But we have been in there for 3 weeks just chilling. Huckberry, our friends based down in Austin, Texas. That's my go-to. That's my go-to shop for all kinds of cool stuff, whether it's clothes, whether it's a cooler, whether it's a pocket knife, whether it's shoes, and also incredible content. They're sending out about 1 million newsletters a day. Just really, really cool content if you're sitting around doom scrolling. You may as well sign up for Huckberry. Cool content and killer gear. Also, here's a cool thing. Whatever you do buy on there, completely risk-free to try. You get it free U.S. shipping on orders over $98, free returns, and best price guarantee. Head on over to huckberry.com to see what catches your eye.
There's a shop in Aspen that sounds just like Huckberry. I went in there yesterday. It's an Aladdin's cave of crap. And I picked up all sorts of little trinkets to take back.
You're going to have a lot of suitcases.
You've been, you guys can't help yourself.
It's next to the Jerome Hotel. It's called Clark's, is it, or something? Little upstairs.
That doesn't rhyme with Huckberry.
I'm not saying it rhymed with Huckberry, but it's this shop is like a poor man's Huckberry.
Clark's or Carl's?
Carl's. That's yeah. the
that's
one.
A pharmacy.
Yeah. Carl's. They kicked me out 3 minutes to six. They said, we're shutting. I had a basket full of stuff.
That place, if you ever are in Aspen, I mean, I tell people all the time. I said, if it ain't in Carl's, you don't need it. I went in there the other day. This is a true story. This is fucked up. I mean, we were clearly in the final days of this thing.
Yeah. Right.
I had something stuck in my tooth. It's kind of been the tour de tooth for this group, but I had something like in the back, up in the back left of my piece of steak or something, and I couldn't get it out. Man, I'm fucking flossing, I'm brushing, I'm gurgling, I'm doing everything, and I'm like, I gotta get this out. And I'm thinking about it, and I go into Carl's, and I see this old lady, you know, the staff there. They've been there for as long as the place has been open, which like I think is 100 years old. I mean, you know, I see this lady. I said, where's the water picks? And she says, oh, they're upstairs. And I said, you know what a water pick is? And she says, of course I do. So I go up in there, got me a water pick, and guess what? Big old piece of steak came out.
Brought to you by Carl's.
Carl's Super.
I kind of do want to go get a water pick now.
Also today brought to you by Helix. You hear us talk about it all the time. Sleep. Sleep is so important. It is all about output, marginal gains. The absolute single biggest factor in recovery isn't a fancy massage tool, a cold plunge. It's actually quality sleep. Helix has 20 different models of mattresses. So whether you sleep on your side, your back, run hot like me, they have a tailored option. Plus, their beds hold up like an absolute tank. Check this out. You just custom order this thing. It shows up on your doorstep. It looks like a set of like a small box. And then you pull it out and it's like, it's a mattress. It's unbelievable. George, you sleep on the Helix. I sleep on the Helix at home. Helix is extending their 4th of July sale, which means you get their best offer off the web, 27% off site-wide for a limited time. Head on over to helixsleep.com/themove. That's helixsleep.com/themove. Also enter the code, themove. Second part of the show. We have some fun stuff to go. Yeah. We do have this data to go. We touched on it yesterday. With the average age of the top 10 in this year's tour, I thought we would just sort of, that would be our look. Spencer took it a step further and went back, I think, decades and started and totaled up some of the average ages. It's pretty shocking. Also got to talk about tomorrow's stages. There has been some updates to the route. France, obviously heat wave. There are fires seemingly all over the world. A lot of fires around Paris, fires in the south of France. I know, and my thoughts go out to the folks down in Cap Ferrat, where I lived for most of my career. The entire peninsula has been evacuated. Yeah. So none of the country has been immune to this heat wave and now the fires. And so there's been some changes to the route. That could be interesting. What else? Anyways, but before we do that, we'll be back in 2 minutes and 32 seconds. All right, we are back. We were chatting on the break about our friends at DraftKings. They had a prop bet yesterday on whether or not Tade wins by 7 minutes or more, which, I mean, the smart money yesterday was like, of course, he's today's stage, queen stage, he's not going to lose time. And then we saw this, what we just talked about. We saw this teamwork, essentially, that he did for Isaac Del Toro. His lead is now 6 minutes. So whoever was the smart money, lost money.
Yeah, because you're
watching this going, no, screw the teammate, no.
Because you could have piled in that big.
Piled.
Thinking, how is he going to lose time?
It's not a guarantee.
Yeah. Honey, I put the house on it. We're not going to lose. And then you would have been watching in horror. Somebody was watching in horror as he sat up to ride with Isaac Del Toro.
Why do you have to be such a good guy, a good teammate? Who cares? And just watching the house.
This is why you should always gamble responsibly, because you would think there's no way. But
yeah, and well, actually looking a little bit like on the Galibier, it looked like Del Toro was having a bad day. Like he looked like
Pogacar tried to back off.
Pogacar had to back off, but then on the last climb, he was really good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the guy could really hope that he has a day that he potentially could have tomorrow on Montmartre. Take back another 32 seconds. I think it's 6:28.
Do we think they do live time tomorrow?
Well, that's last year, there was a lot of rain and frustration because of the weather that they stopped the time. Not a lot of fans of that, certainly here at the desk. So who knows? I haven't checked the weather for Paris. A few days ago, it was calling for rain in Paris, which no matter what the stage is, no matter what the circuit is in Paris, that just sucks. That sucks for everybody there, all the families that come to see the guys that are finishing. But hopefully that's not the case.
Might not be raining now.
Okay, good.
We'll see.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. We have spent a lot of time talking about how this Peloton and the best guys in this Peloton are just getting younger and younger and younger. And of course, the poster child for this is Paul Seixas. He's 19 years old. He's the youngest rider in the race since 1937. He's going to end up fourth in the Tour de France. We've watched Tadej Pogačar in his early 20s, you know, go on and become the greatest of all time. This would have been unheard of. I made a comment today. I was like, Seixas, Del Toro is very, you know. Bradley says, well, what were you doing at 19? I was like, getting drunk and acting like an idiot. Very different. But the whole thing is younger and younger, right? The average age, and you have the other years. The average age for this year's top 10 is 25.9 years old. That would have been unheard of in our generation.
Yeah.
And then if you go back.
Yeah. So this is what's interesting. So I was going through every year last night. Average age of the top 10, let's just say it's 25. Average age of the Peloton at this tour, 29 years old. It's like, whoa, quite a bit younger, almost 4 years younger. You go back to 2018, Geraint Thomas wins the Tour de France. Average age of the top 10, 29.3.
Wow.
Average age of the Peloton, roughly the same, 29. And then you go back to 2005, 2002, that average age of the top 10 never really leaves the 29, you know, because the winner was usually between, 26 and 32, about, and everyone in the top 10 was between 28 and 32. So you're landing in this 29 years of age for the top 10 average, with the average in the Peloton always around 29 or 30. So it used to be the same, but now what's interesting to me is the Peloton's not really getting that much younger, but the top 10 is getting a lot younger.
Yeah,
that is. Back to the Seixas, I mean, being 19 years old, yes, I know the team's goal was for him to be on the podium, but for him to finish fourth place, not have a crack, he's shown that he has the foundation to ultimately one day be a Tour de France winner.
George, you were very serious at 16, 17 years old. I mean, you were great. You were already, and I'm being serious. I mean, you were on your way. And now you have Enzo, who's same age. Like, if you can think back to, and I can imagine what your training and what life was like as a 17-year-old want to be professional bike racer, compare that to Enzo. And I think where I'm going with this is I think this is points to why this is trending lower. I mean, his life.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I had zero nutritional guidelines. Just eat like crap, junk food, and then just go ride hard. But now it's like
you rode on feel.
Yeah, rode on feel. Now they like every ride is measured. They all have coaches. They send in their training. The training's analyzed. They have, of course, they train really hard, a lot more specific, but they also have a lot more breaks as well. You know, they'll go full on for 6 weeks to 8 weeks, and they'll get a week off the bike several times a year. We never did that. Mm-hmm. And their nutrition is completely dialed in. There's no guesswork anymore. Everything's measured out. They know exactly what they spend on the bike, exactly what they need to replace, if they want to lose weight, if they want to maintain weight. I mean, it's insane, the knowledge they have now.
Same for Ben. I mean, is he sending stuff in daily to the team? Yeah. And they're analyzing everything,
weighing food, all that sort of stuff. But the thing I would say is, how long do we, what's the longevity of someone like Seixas? 19, how many years now has he got the Tour de France at this level, at this, how meticulous he is to try and win the race? Do you think he's done by 29?
Yeah, I think they go till, I mean, I feel like the trend is like they go till 30 and then they're like, I'm good. That was 10 years full gas.
The only thing about, so usually if you go back throughout history, a rider has 10 years from their first big win to their last big win. Almost Lance is an outlier. Eddie Merckx is a little bit of an outlier, but it's almost always 10 years. So probably, that will remain. Like if your first big win is 19, your last might be 29. But with the amount of money on the line, do you guys really think people are going to just disappear? Do you think they're going to hang on and not be as good as they were?
Yeah,
you could we'll make see. An extra 12 mil a year by hanging on, you might hang on for a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're that guy at DraftKings who took the 7 minute bet.
Yeah.
He's taking all the money.
Like yeah, by the time Paul Sixauce is 29, the average salary.
Well, you don't know who comes up and, under them and behind them. Like that's you may not be a $12 million rider if the next. I mean, there is another. And the next generation is Enzo's generation, right? It's crazy to think that we could look at Enzo and say, well, we have 5, 6, 7 years before we even see him in the tour. I don't think we can say that anymore, right? So this kind of hyper focus on performance recovery, training, data analytics, all the other stuff off the bike. You're going to see younger and younger guys.
Do you think like Pogacar's 27? Do you think he'll be usurped by a younger rider, or he'll just retire? Because it doesn't seem like the younger generation is pressuring him at all.
No, I think it retired because there's another winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Let's look at tomorrow's stage, which has been amended before we do. Of course, next stage preview brought to you by Hyperice. They have the Normatec Elite Legs deliver sequential pressure throughout the legs, helping them feel refreshed, lighter, and ready for the next ride. Get 15% off Hyperice products now with the code THEMOVE15 at hyperice.com/discount/THEMOVE15. Okay. Remind me again. This Montmartre. Tomorrow's stage. Yeah. But last year was the first year we went up Montmartre.
Yep.
I get confused because we had the Olympics.
Yeah. There. In the Tour de France, it was the first year. And then we did the Olympics year before.
Yeah. By all accounts, and I think the news is still sort of coming in due to these wildfires in this area in the first 50 kilometers in the stage. Professor, you said they're going to basically shorten the stage to 86 kilometers.
Yeah, well, they're going to do the presentation in the start town. They got to collect that check, right?
Yeah, that's right.
The important thing. And then you put everybody on the bus. The bus drives them to the green S, so they park there. And then they're going to get out and race for 86K. Mm. They've added a lap of the Champs-Élysées, I think, at the beginning. Maybe the sprint points right after that. I don't know what they're going to do about that. And then three laps of the climb, the three passes of the climb. That's going to be really intense. I think more intense than the original route.
So then you make it shorter, it makes it even...
Yeah.
Like arguably no ceremonial start where they spend their first hour...
No,
sipping champagne. That's too
bad. You have to get the photos out of the way. Yeah. Tade needs a photo with.
Yeah. Didn't George
needs a photo with the
year.
Team?
Did you crash one?
Did crash one year?
Yeah. It was raining. Really? I always worry about that when I see the guys.
I did crash. I mean, a little bit of everything, but.
And then I guess the other question is: where do they stop the time, or is this a real bike race?
They're saying it's a real bike race.
It should be.
They don't normally say it's not a real bike race, though. That's the thing you can never trust. Mm. And then if they neutralize the time, they do it right at the start or right after the start.
Yeah.
What do you guys think it should be live?
Yeah.
Real time?
Of course.
Yeah.
Why go up there? Mm. Why do it?
Every year I've done it, it's always been live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, why add something is Montmartre is kind of sacred for the city of Paris. Don't go up there if you're not going to race it.
Yeah, I mean, technical course, it could be like a little, only 90K, but like I would envision the classics guys, Vanderpool, Mats Pedersen, those type of people going all in for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Your real shot for a stage win.
Hmm. Who do you guys think is going to?
I mean, the way Mads is going right now, unless he's like, I got the green jersey, I'm done. Like, who knows where he is mentally, but like, if he wants to go for the win tomorrow, I think with the team that he has, he can certainly win tomorrow.
Mm. Mathieu.
I kind of think
Vanderpool.
The only thing is, it's just hard to know where his form is. Like,
has he been taking it easy in the gruppetto? Or
Has
he been just
surviving? Or can he just dial it up whenever he wants?
Yeah, I think a guy like that can do this last week super chill in the gruppetto.
But can he dial it past? Is Mads Pedersen on a level, like basically a superhuman, maybe God level? Like what he's doing, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like
that. You saw the way Vanderpool won that stage. Well, that seems like a year ago, but like he's on the same level and arguably had a much easier week. Well, not arguably, definitely had a much easier week than Mads Pedersen. So if he's wants to go for the win tomorrow, I think it'd be a really good battle.
Mm. Yeah. And Quinn Simmons is bolted to Mads Pedersen just to support him, or he's given a little free rein?
Yeah, I mean, 90K is kind of hard to envision like a breakaway getting away.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe from the climb second to last time up, but before that, I would imagine it's going to be a shit show battle to get to the bottom of the first time up the climb.
What about Pogacar?
I mean, you know, Pogacar, you would think he's done. Like he's won the Tour de France. He's won five stages.
Yeah, five.
I can't see him going for the win tomorrow.
You guys think? Yeah. The classics talks reminded me, weird thing, at the Tour of Flanders, only two riders under 30 in the top 10. How weird is that?
Yeah, that is weird.
So then you have these, there's no young generation in the classics, it seems like. Classics are all old guys. Huh. Remco's the up-and-coming classics rider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strange.
Which we didn't even mention Remco today. Yeah. Amazing ride.
Shout out. I
mean, he's confirmed his GC world-class status, riding away from a guy like Del Toro. Obviously, Pogacar probably didn't try to go with him, but finishing off the Tour de France, very strong. Mm. Second place in the Tour, best ever Tour de France result. A super impressive ride. Mm.
Maybe could have won that stage.
Yeah.
Maybe gone earlier.
Mm. When do you think we missed Lipovic, didn't we, this last week? We also missed Jonas,
of course.
And kind of wonder how much of a different race it would have been the last few days
with
those guys there. Tadej would certainly have to have raced in a different way today.
Jonas probably would have blown up the group yesterday because he would have tried to follow and then,
Let's take your calls. We got two more days of calls. Actually, and you actually have one more day to call and leave a message. That number, 970-718-2736. Caller number one.
Hey guys, this is Matt from St. Paul, Minnesota. We all love listening to Lance talk about his favorite jersey in the Tour. We'd just like to hear your thoughts on what we could do to make the climbing competition a little more exciting and better reward the best climber in the Tour. Thanks.
I mean, how weird is it that of all these questions, I'm assuming the questions or the calls that Colton picks are before we start the show. This mad guy's got like ESP or something. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. I don't know. I mean, I just think the best climber in the race should be awarded that jersey. But I also said earlier, I mean, I'm not going to argue with Carapaz. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's a bike racer. It's been a long time since I was rooted, was sort of sitting there applauding the polka dot jersey and the guy who wore it. I mean, you saw the guy who had it 2 days ago, Perry Pontra. The guy had his reverse lights on today on the Galibier.
Yeah.
You can't have that. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I probably have a lot of just old stuff with, Virenque would always, it was all he cared about. And I'm like, man, get out of the way. You can't climb with me.
Carapaz is not the fastest climber at this Tour, but is he the best climber day after day?
With the aggressiveness.
I mean, like today, he had to pretty much go all out on all three climbs and still made it to the finish line.
I mean, he did get a little lucky with the crash of Sepp Kuss. By the way, we do not know what would have happened in the final 3, 4, 5 kilometers of Alpe d'Huez today to the finish because
it was a hard one.
Because Carapaz was going.
Yeah.
Like you saw him out of these corners. I mean, this guy was not just holding on, he was accelerating.
Yeah.
So that might have been an, I mean, maybe he knew also, he also knows that he's a better descender than Sepp Kuss. Maybe that was the plan, but that's a good question.
I feel like he kept riding away from him and holding that gap like 12, 15 seconds. It would have been close, but I think my money would have been on Sepp to make it.
Because Pogacar, as great as he is, set the record on Alpe d'Huez, probably the best climbing performance we've ever seen. He's not out there doing what Carapaz is doing. Like he's respecting every climb, like attacking every climb. To me, that is a worthy winner, even if he might not be the fastest climber.
Yeah. Are you, Bradley, you're sitting there looking at me. I mean, how are you?
No, I'm just,
are you a fan of the, am I being mean or
I mean, you fair? Have a different perspective on it. I'm not sure. But I the King of the Mountains is always, it has had years where it's not had a worthy winner.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like Jimmy Young, a few years ago, there was a guy called one with a Bouygues Telecom who won it. Not Vauclair, the other one. But, it's a funny one. It really is. But, I come from an age where when I was watching it as a kid and Claudio Chiappucci would be winning it and, Robert Miller and people like that. And back then, the best climber tended to win it.
Well, Chiappucci was a great climber. Miguel Indurain was a better climber.
More fish.
If they had to climb and said, that's it, your life depends on it at the top of the mountain, Indurain's getting there first. Mm. I mean, Indurain.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's a better climber.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is the Tour de France. Stage wins are massively important for teams. Mm. Jerseys on the final day of Paris, very important for teams. So I think even though it's maybe not, he's not a better climber than Pogacar, it's still a very incredible win to take that jersey to Paris.
No, I'm gonna be with you on that one. All right, caller number two.
Hey, this is Jimmy Casper here from Picardy, France. No, just kidding. This is David from Montreal. I was just wondering, as the World Championships are coming here, what are your picks? That's it, guys. Love the show. Thank you, guys.
David, I'll be there. I'll be there the whole week for the World
Championships. Did you hear what he said?
I'll be there too. Yeah,
really?
He said, this is Jimmy Casper calling.
Oh, that's not Jimmy.
what our pick was? Or?
Yeah, pick for Worlds.
That course is tailor-made for Pogacar. Yeah. So,
third year in a row?
Third year in a row. I kind of agree with you, George, but Johan claims that it's not. He thinks that it's going to be an open race. Hmm. I feel like, though, Pogacar could turn the historic Champs-Élysées finish into a selective race if he really wanted to.
Yeah, agreed.
I do think it's probably going to be Pogacar. 3 years in a row. Yeah. Last person to do that was, do you guys remember?
Oscar Freire, no? No, Sagan.
Yeah.
Peter Sagan.
Yeah, Peter Sagan.
Oh, of course.
So, he could win the next year because it said that his home course in the UAE.
Yeah, but it's all dead flat next year.
I think they're probably going to add some climbs.
No, they're talking about doing it, but then they changed their mind.
They're going to build the climbs?
Climbs now on the Hutterati track. Like, you can do like a full on 1K 1500 meter climb up the sand dunes with like switchbacks and stuff. It's wild.
Come on.
Yeah. And there's a whole course around it. It's like a 20K course. We did the time trial there in UAE.
Well, I would pick Pogacar. However, the race that I am the most interested in is the U23 time trial.
Time trial, yeah.
Our man Ben Wiggins.
Yeah, he'd be there.
He's definitely going to be there. And I am not, said another way, I'm only watching one race of the World Championships, and it's Ben Wiggins.
You're not going to watch Zoe?
Oh. I'm going to watch two races. I'm going to watch, what is that? Is it categorized as junior?
U19, yeah.
Junior. U19. I'm going to watch the U19 road race, or is he in the time trial?
Both, yeah.
So I'm going to watch. Okay, then that's three. Is Ben in the road race too?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm watching four races. The U19 time trial and road race, and the U23 time trial and road race. Basta. That's Basta. Enough for me.
I'm going to be there with so much Pioneer Pastures for Ben.
Yeah.
At the finish line.
Are you there as a journalist suitcases. Or are you there with a team? Or
a journalist. Yeah.
Cool. Who are you there with? Journalism? Journaling?
Well, maybe we should talk about this. Hopefully with We Do, if they don't cancel it after watching this.
What? What did we say?
Well, I just don't want... I don't want to draw attention to any submissions of...
Cycling news.
Press credentials.
Yeah.
You know.
Just want to be going, just put it across the table, get stamped. I'm good to go.
I was just thinking about something this morning. I was Googling, and I can't say it. I'm not going to say it. I can't.
Let's put the Google search
offline. Say it offline.
Just throw it up on the big
screen. I'll say it offline and see if it's safe, if you guys think I should talk about it tomorrow. Because tomorrow we are going to have... I think we should have just our reflections on this tour, whether it be the course, whether it be the riders, whether it be the stories, the controversies, whatever. I think that's a good idea. So I'll run this by you. I'll let you guys edit my reflections of 2026. Today's Ventum trivia. Of course, yesterday's question, stage 20 crosses Col de Glibier, which earns what distinction in the 2026 race? The answer is, it is the highest point of the entire tour at 2,642 meters. Today's question, which of course you head on over to ventumracing.com/themove to enter your answer. You get five, if you win or you get picked or whatever, you get $5,000 credit towards the Ventum bike of your choice. Today's question, the iconic Alpe d'Huez climb is defined by... Bradley, we need you doing these questions.
Yeah. Well, I did say that a week ago.
Okay. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I got
Spencer.
They stopped giving me the job.
The iconic Alpe d'Huez climb.
This is a gimme for people who haven't got it right yet.
Yeah, we want people to win.
Yeah.
The iconic Alpe d'Huez climb is defined by how many numbered hairpin bends. And if you're watching earlier in the show, you have your answer. Head on over to ventumracing.com/themove. Anything else? No. No. Somebody did comment.
The motto.
Somebody did comment on I think on one of the socials. They said it was one of the pictures. Mm. A lady said, "You know, Sir Bradley looks bored." And I almost replied, "Well, because he is." There's just been some times that it's just been boring. We've talked about that. We've talked about it on the show. It's not. I thought it was kind of funny though.
Well,
I'll talk about tomorrow.
It's my ADHD. You know, I zone out when it gets bored. But I'm back now. I'm back in the room.
Back.
What are we doing? I'll see you tomorrow.
We will see you guys tomorrow. Have a great day.